All right. We're back.
We're back. Welcome to another episode of the Hell Money Podcast.
The vibes are off today.
The vibes are off today.
The vibes are terrible today.
Yeah, yeah. We both sort of had shitty holidays for different reasons.
We've got the holiday blues.
The holiday blues, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
'Tis the season. The days are getting shorter.
That's right.
You know.
We got another month before the solstice and the sun starts turning things around.
Yeah, we really just got to get through the next month. This is actually the time of year when I get really addicted to video games.
Oh, really?
I only have like one season a year where I like really indulge in playing video games, and it's always like Thanksgiving, like a little bit before Thanksgiving through till Christmas. Usually I play Stardew Valley. I just like start a new game.
Yeah. Okay. That's very like on brand for you.
Yeah. I usually play Stardew Valley and I just redo it. And then by the time it's Christmas, I'm like over it.
You know, he's making a new game.
I know, but it's
about fantasy chocolatiers.
I know, but he keeps saying like, he's like, oh, it's coming out. I don't have a release date. Like, so we'll fucking see, but
it'll come eventually.
I'm excited for it. It's a great, Stardew Valley, but I'm not actually playing Stardew Valley this year. I'm playing The Sims 4.
Oh, really? Damn. You know, I used to work at Maxis.
Really?
Yeah. My
Wait, what?
Yeah. When I was 18, I got a job as a video game tester at Maxis in Walnut Creek, back when it used to be an independent company from Electronic Arts. And we were the games that Maxis was working on at the time, and I was testing, was I think SimCity 3 or 4, and The Sims Bustin' Out, which was the GameCube version, the console version of The Sims. It was very bad. It might have been The Sims Bustin' Out 2. It was atrocious. Yeah. And so we just tested that thing. It was a very weird, very dark period of my life. One time I tested The Sims Bustin' Out for like 20 hours. And then I slept under my desk for like 4 hours. And then I woke up and tested it again for like another 16 hours.
When you say tested it out, like, were you playing or were you like trying to break it? Like, what do you mean testing
it
out?
Yeah, playing is kind of too strong a word. Basically just like doing things that the player would do, looking for bugs, like trying to find problems with the game.
Wow. I mean, honestly, Sims 4 is pretty buggy. So it sounds like you didn't do a very good job.
Listen,
back
that
in
was
the beginning
after my
of the
time.
Chain. You could have really turned things around there and maybe we wouldn't be in this mess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, I've been playing Sims 4 and I just created my own life.
Like, yeah, we used to do that. I did that when I was working on The Sims. Like, I made our little corner of the like of the office, and I had characters that looked like us. It was an interesting time. One time I was like, I wasn't at work for some reason, and my coworker got a coconut from the dollar store and put it on my chair and talked to it like it was me.
In the game?
No, in the office.
Oh.
In real Max's office. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird. Like, I don't really know why Sims happened this time around and not Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
I think I was trying to like use it as like a manifestation tool,
uh-huh.
like to be like, look, I can make my Sim be productive in The Sims, and maybe that'll make my Sim be productive in real life.
Yeah.
It hasn't worked that way. But why did we get on the topic of, oh, because we got the holiday
holidays.
Blues.
Holiday blues. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a mess out here. We were nominally going to talk about hardware wallets and sort of technical questions today.
Yeah, like wallets, seed phrases, private keys, all that stuff.
Yeah.
We don't really have much of a, what's the word for when you write ahead what you're going to do?
Like a plan, like a plot? I don't know.
Like a plan? Agenda. We don't really have much of an agenda.
An itinerary.
Yeah, and also we have a hard stop in 40 minutes.
Yeah, so we're just doing what we can.
Yeah, we're doing what we can. Yeah.
Well, basically what we're going to do is Casey's going to mansplain to me.
That's right,
about hardware wallets. Do you consider yourself to be a mansplainer?
Let me just be like, okay, I'm not going to take issue with the word mansplaining.
Yeah, put yourself in the framework of mansplaining.
Yeah, then I'm a horrible mansplainer. Yeah. Because I always want to talk to people about things that they don't necessarily know about or have the background to understand. Mm-hmm. And so in order to talk to people about things, I'll often have to do a lot of explaining.
Yeah.
And I think some people are really interested in the things that I explain about, and some people are not interested at all. And they just want to speed run to the end of the conversation.
Can you tell? like when people are like, oh God, like I do not want to hear about this random Bitcoin thing that he's going off about.
Yeah, but I'll kind of persist anyways. Like,
so I, yeah, you're totally a mansplainer. Yeah, that's like the definition. Yeah. Well, okay. So I have opinions about mansplaining because like mansplaining is something that's often like projected onto me of being like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm sure people.
You're mansplain. A mansplainer.
I'm a mansplainer, for sure. Yeah. Like, but I think people like think like, oh, she must experience mansplaining all the time. Like people often think like that they're going to like relate to me by being like, oh, mansplaining. Oh,
yeah.
Right? No, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I
but no, you want to know things.
I like knowing things. Right. I have very few things that I can point to in my mind of experiences that I would describe as mansplaining, and mm-hmm. actually most of them are like one particular woman who I think mansplains.
Mm.
Like she is a man. She will just sort of like.
Can you say who it is, or does her?
I'm not gonna say.
Okay,
her.
Fine.
Like, well, I know her because she's you know. It's just this girl I know. It's like a girlfriend of someone, and it's interesting because she often says that her boyfriend mansplains to her. But he doesn't. He definitely is not a mansplainer. She's the man. It's projection.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But she will like take any opportunity to kind of be like, well, let me tell you about this thing over here, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And it is kind of like, it's mostly just awkwardness. Like mm-hmm. it's kind of just like, why do you think I want to know about this? This is like pretty random. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I have learned a lot of useful information from her over mm-hmm. the years that I've known her.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like. Pros and cons. Mansplaining.
Yeah.
You're definitely a mansplainer, and I definitely think that there are times where you're going off and I'm just like, okay, like we're gonna just let this happen. But I can tell that you enjoy it.
Yeah, I enjoy it, and most of the time it's because I think something is cool and I want to tell somebody else about the thing that I think is cool.
Exactly. And I think like people experience that as being like, they think it's like a personal attack. Like this person is mansplaining to me because they think that I don't know this thing. And like, they think I'm stupid.
Yeah.
And I actually think mansplaining is more of like a personal, like the person who's mansplaining
is because they want to explain something or they want to be helpful or they're excited about something. It's not about you, the mansplainee.
Exactly. Which is not like, that's not like a morally good thing either for someone to just like not be receiving the other person in a conversation and just be like, spewing mm-hmm. facts and information, but like,
yep.
I think it's a little bit more like, it's not an attack the way, yep. you know, mansplaining is gender neutral. As I said,
that's
women
right.
can mansplain, men can mansplain,
right.
Girl bossing is gender neutral. Men yep. can girl boss, girls can, everyone can girl boss, everyone can mansplain. You know, we get both.
Yep.
So but
ready
yeah.
for me to mansplain.
I'm ready. Yeah. Yeah. Where do you want to start?
I mean,
we were talking a lot about hardware wallets recently because,
yeah, hardware wallets.
Getting my Bitcoin off the exchanges.
Hardware wallets are probably not the right place to start.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I guess the right place to start is like, well, like, what even is a private key? How is Bitcoin spent? Like, why do we need private keys?
Yes. Yep. Tell me about private keys.
Yeah, private keys. So, you know, as you and our audience will remember from our craft store Bitcoin UTXO
Everyone will
set.
Remember this.
Yes. The way that Bitcoin works is that it doesn't have accounts. It has these things called UTXOs mm-hmm. or unspent transaction outputs. And you can sort of forget about where they come from. The secret is they come from transactions that happened before. And just think about this case where you have some UTXOs. What it means to the way that you have a UTXO is you have a private key. And the UTXO is stamped with the public key that corresponds to that private key. And that means that you can take a transaction and sign that transaction that moves that UTXO to a new, gives that UTXO essentially a new public key mm-hmm. that then the holder who holds the corresponding private key can use to spend it in the same fashion.
Wait, you said don't pay attention to this, but what do you mean it was like when you said it's created from a transaction before? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, like I mean that the same you would have received it by the same process that you will send it to somebody else.
Okay.
Or you could be a miner, in which case when you create a block, you just get to create the special UTXO or UTXOs with your key. And that's how new Bitcoin entered the system. And so you didn't receive it from anywhere else.
So how do you create a new UTXO?
Yeah. So like what are Bitcoin? Bitcoin are stored in UTXOs.
Mm-hmm.
UTXOs have a public key associated with it. This is like a simplification. Really, it's something called script. It can do more things than a public key. But just from a first blush, it is a public key that's allowed to spend it. And so the person who holds the private key that corresponds to that public key can create a transaction and sign that transaction with their private key and then broadcast that transaction to the network. The full nodes on the network will receive that transaction and they can see that the person, they can see the signature and they can see the public key of the UTXO that's being spent, and they can verify that the signature could only have been made by somebody who has the private key that corresponds to the public key,
mm-hmm.
without knowing what that private key is or letting anybody else like change the signature or produce a new signature just by seeing the signature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basic way that UTXOs or that Bitcoin moves, is you have some, your wallet is essentially like a collection of some private keys, and those private keys control some set of UTXOs that all the, that in the full node, in the UTXO set that all the full nodes are keeping track of. And then when you want to spend Bitcoin or send Bitcoin, you create a transaction that consumes one of those UTXOs and creates new UTXOs with new public keys, i.e. the public key of the person you're sending it to. And you, your wallet signs that transaction with the appropriate private keys.
So UTXOs are destroyed with transactions?
That's right. Yeah, UTXOs are, the UTXOs that are input to a transaction are destroyed, and then new UTXOs are created as output of that transaction.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And the rule is that the value of the input UTXOs has to be equal to or less than the value of the output
UTXOs. Right, and that would be like the transaction fee would be the difference if it's less than.
Exactly. That's output. Exactly right. Yeah, right. That's right.
And yeah, you can go to our CrowdStore Bitcoin episode.
That's right. Yeah,
CrowdStore Bitcoin. That's how I know that.
Yeah.
I was curious about hardware wallets. Since
yes. Yep.
Getting my Bitcoin off exchanges.
Yep.
I already had a hardware wallet, but you know, yeah. Whatever. There was some.
Were you, by the way, were you impacted by the FTX?
I was not impacted by the FTX.
Oh, were you impacted by any other?
I don't think so. We'll see. I'm not sure yet. It's yet to be seen. What about you, Casey? Were you impacted?
I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, maybe glass house shouldn't throw bricks or whatever.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're all thinking about
very into self-custody.
Very into self-custody. Very, very sovereign at the moment. Feeling extremely very sovereign. Yeah. So yeah, hardware wallets.
Yeah. We are feeling pretty sovereign because we're kind of lonely.
That's right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, hardware wallets.
Hardware wallets.
We're thinking
yeah.
about hardware wallets.
Yep. So like why hardware
yeah,
wallet?
Yeah, why like what does this actually do?
Yeah, so the main thing, yeah, there's a few things that it does. Let's consider the case where you don't have a hardware wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you are just using a software wallet on your computer. I like Sparrow Wallet a lot. And I think Sparrow Wallet has a mode where you don't need to attach a hardware wallet. And if you do that, then the private keys are on your computer. They're on your hard disk, sort of like any other file, you know, like your, you know, sa.doc or whatever.
Right.
It's also on your hard disk. And when you go to make a transaction, you will like copy and paste somebody's address, and you'll paste it into the, you know, send to field, and you type some BTC, and then you'll hit sign, and it'll show you the transaction, and then you go, okay, that looks good, and then you hit sign, and then it broadcasts the transaction to the network. So the problem is that if your computer has any malware on it, the malware could change the destination address without showing it to you, or it could exfiltrate your private keys from your computer.
So like, does that mean that like a software wallet mm-hmm. that's like on your computer is just as safe as like your computer getting hacked? Like that's sort of the secure, like if your computer is hacked in some way,
yep.
then
your software wallet is also host. Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And like people aren't super careful about what they run on their computers.
I'm not, I click anything.
Yeah. And like I'm a developer. And so that means that I run a lot of, you know, random dev tools. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like to think about like all the random sources of software that I get just to do my work, you know, editor plugins and utilities and stuff.
Right.
So yeah, so the purpose of a hardware wallet such as these cute little cold cards.
They're so cute.
They're pretty adorable.
Can we get a cold card sponsor?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Cold card.
Sometimes they retweet my ordinal posts. Oh. Because when I do stuff with like ordinals on Open Dimes, they sometimes retweet
them. This is a logical collaboration, cold card. Get with it.
Yeah, I think so. So a cold card is a hardware device, and like all hardware devices, the purpose is that instead of having your private keys ever be on your computer, the private keys are only ever on your hardware device. And
so the private keys are in there.
The private keys are in there. Yep. Okay. And you don't run arbitrary software on here. Like you don't run a web browser that could
download. Sure. It's like a contained device.
Contained. Yeah. You don't install apps. And so there's the hardware wallets should be designed very carefully so that they, I actually need to, I keep this one so that I can distinguish these two.
Oh.
Yep. But the hardware wallets are designed with a very minimal attack surface. So they don't run, they don't have a lot of capabilities. They don't do a lot of stuff. They're just there to like sign your Bitcoin transactions.
Is there a level of vulnerability? Like, okay, this is a Ledger, yep. right? Like what yep. if Ledger has some sort of hack or issue or whatever? Does that propagate to a hardware wallet that is made by Ledger, or is it like independent?
Yeah, this is kind of a complicated question. Ledger has like, yes. So Ledger, if you have your hardware wallet from let's say Ledger, mm-hmm. and Ledger gets hacked, you're okay. However, periodically you will install a new on a Ledger. You'll update the firmware on your Ledger. You'll sort of update the program that runs on the Ledger, and those updates are downloaded from I guess it's the company is also called Ledger, mm-hmm. is downloaded from Ledger, the company. And if they get hacked and they distribute a malicious update
and you download and update it.
Yeah. And that's actually one thing that I don't really like about Ledger is that when you reset your hardware wallet, the next time you want to use it, you have to download like the little Bitcoin app onto your hardware wallet.
I see.
And so if for whatever reason you prefer to keep your Ledger uninitialized, it means that every time you go to use it, you have to re-download this crucial software from Ledger, and that would be an opportunity for them to get hacked.
Right.
Whereas a cold card, you can keep it uninitialized, and when you erase it, you don't need to re-download software from CoinKite, the makers of cold card. So for cold cards, if you don't need to update it, you shouldn't need to update it unless there's like a critical security vulnerability. Mm-hmm. So as long as you don't update it, even if cold card gets completely owned, then it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And you're not, because you're not downloading new software onto the device.
Right.
So there's kind of two purposes to a hardware wallet, or the two things that you do. One is it signs your transactions. And obviously that's like important, right? Is it keeps the private keys on this device, so the private keys can't get on another device.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that it does is it displays the transaction that it's signing. It shows you who the recipient is and what the amounts are,
mm-hmm.
And you verify it on the screen of the hardware device, on the screen of the hardware wallet. That's actually another crucial step because, for example, if you just reviewed the transaction on your computer, malicious software could change the...
Right, it could be like a fake pop-up or whatever, just saying like, you're sending it here when
exactly.
you're actually sending it somewhere else.
Exactly, yeah.
You can't send like a transaction without a computer hooked up to this, right? Like I couldn't just be like, beep, 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 boop, boop.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have... Yeah. For cold cards, you can either connect it via a USB cable, or if you're really paranoid, you can use an SD card to like shuttle data back and forth between your computer and the cold card.
And so the benefit of having it... the benefit of having the recipient show up on here is that you can verify what you're seeing on the computer. Like you see it in both places and you're like,
oh yeah, okay, you actually don't even pay attention to what's on your computer. You should consider.
It just matters what's here.
Yeah. And technically when you're receiving funds, people don't usually do this, but you should actually, when let's say you ask me for, I ask you for some Bitcoin,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to send me some Bitcoin. So I want to send you a Bitcoin address. I should go to my hardware wallet and verify the address on my hardware wallet before I send it to you. Because, for example, let's say I just used my software wallet to generate the next address that the hardware wallet was going to generate. Mm-hmm. But there was malware on my computer and it generated an attacker's address instead.
Right.
And then I sent you the attacker's address. The attacker would get the Bitcoin. But if I first verified the address on my cold card, that would give me some measure of protection that I might catch it. There are other, like, that's not foolproof, right? Like, anytime I'm sending you an address over, you know, Signal or whatever, then other software can have vulnerabilities and can, like, replace the address.
See, this is why, like, I don't know, when people say, like, oh, cold storage, it's so easy.
I'm oh,
like,
yeah, no, is I don't it think really? It's easy, yeah.
Like, I think it's one thing, like, to just put your Bitcoin on a hardware wallet and just, like, leave it there and be like, all right, this is my nest egg. 30 years from now, I'm going to be a millionaire. Yep. You know, like, that is easy, sure. But, like, if you actually wanted to use your Bitcoin for anything or send it anywhere on, like, a regular basis, like, actually use it for finance, like, this is stressful.
Yeah, it's stressful. Yeah, I think most people sort of wind up having a workflow where they have a cold storage wallet and they don't do every transaction from their cold storage wallet.
Right.
They, you know, every, you know, month or so or every couple months, they top up a sort of checking account wallet from their cold card, from their cold storage savings wallet. And then most of the transactions they do out of their savings wallet.
So, like, cold card would be like savings.
That's right. Cold card would be savings.
And then you'd have like a checking account essentially that would be like a wallet on your computer you would transfer over to.
That's right. Yep. Right. And if you have a choice between a software wallet on a computer and a software wallet on a phone, you're probably better off with a software wallet on your phone.
Hmm.
Personal computers have been around for a long time. And the model of a personal computer is that basically every program that's running on the personal computer can talk to every other program that's running on the personal computer.
Right.
They can all access the same files. They're all just sort of floating in the same soup of computer goo. Phones are much more recent, and phones have always had a much tighter security model where different applications on the phone can only interact with each other in very specific ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for example, like, you need to give an app permissions before it accesses your photos, whereas on a lot of modern computers, the apps can just read and write your photos. So I would say generally phones are a slightly more secure environment and less likely to have malware.
Right.
So if you have a choice about where to put a software wallet, I'd say, yeah, put a software wallet on a phone.
Hmm.
And also, security, people will sometimes make like absolute statements like, oh, you should always use a hardware wallet or, you know, do this security best practice all the time. But really it depends on how much money you have and how upset you would be if you lost that money.
Right.
You know, like if you have a hardware wallet, if you have a wallet that has, you know, less than $1,000 on it and it would be really annoying to lose it, but like you don't care that much. Then, like, yeah, just use a software wallet.
Right, yep. Right. In terms of, like, maybe this is a question that might be, like, too hardware specific and you can't answer this, but, like, how big does this need to be? Like, this is just, like, is this an efficiently sized object? Or is there, like, could this be, could I have a tooth cap that, like, my hardware wallet is in? And then if I was in a pinch, I could swallow the tooth cap and be like, good luck getting it from me.
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. Like, part of the size of the device is limited by the fact that it needs a display and it needs these keys.
Hmm.
Right. So
what if it had a little projector in it and then it could project?
I think
have we perfected the micro projector technology?
It's not a bad thought, although I think that micro projectors would be larger. You would need more batteries and stuff than just having this like display. But I mean, you could get this down to, like, for example, this, it doesn't have keys. It just has two keys that like, this is like left and right. And this is like turn everything on and turn everything off by holding them down. So you could certainly make this, you could certainly get away with, God, hard to say. I mean, so then, you know, there is this microcontroller in here and you can see about the size of that microcontroller. So it's probably not going to go in your tooth. And it also needs like a USB-C thing to connect to the rest of the world. But yeah, these could be made extremely small. If you really were focusing on making it small, you could make it, easily 1/10 of the size without too much worry and thinking a lot about the interface, you could probably make it like 1/100 of the size, maybe. Mostly it's the size that it is for humans, right? It's
right, a for nice you to size, actually use it.
For you to actually use it. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But, you know, in a doomsday scenario.
Doomsday scenario.
Maybe you'd want a micro hardware wallet.
Yeah.
Oh, I also wanted to ask about seed phrases.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
yeah.
I feel like this is kind of a weird, like the idea of a seed phrase as being a way to access your Bitcoin or your cryptocurrency is something that's pretty specific to cryptocurrency. Like it's very integral to crypto or Bitcoin.
It's very unique to Bitcoin. I don't think that I ever encountered anything like a seed phrase before I used my first Bitcoin wallet that had a seed phrase.
It's weird. That's same. And I've never heard of that being a way to protect anything ever.
Yeah.
And it's just bizarre. Like, cause I'm kind of like, this is a very integral part of like the infrastructure of how this whole situation works.
And I also think that the fact that there's one standard, well, there's some complications with like XPubs and YPubs and like different ways you can generate private keys from a seed phrase. So a seed phrase is just a list of 12 or 24 words. It's picked from a specific list of 2048 English words that were chosen to be like not close to each other. And it essentially, it encodes this like little secret, this 128-bit or 256-bit secret that's just like a long binary number. And then from that secret, you can generate any amount of private keys that you want. And so that's how a wallet that uses a seed phrase generates its private keys. It sort of generates this chain of private keys from this initial root secret. And why is a seed phrase the way that it is? Well, so one reason is that each word is from this list of 2048 words, and all the words on that list are very different. There aren't words that are easy to confuse. So if you write down your seed phrase, even if you misspell one letter or you smudge it, you're still likely to be able to figure out which letter on the list it is, you know, because like there are no two words on that list that differ by just one letter.
You should run that list through like Ordinal database.
Oh, yeah.
Ordinal bounties for all the seed phrases were the 2048.
I kind of suspect
phrases.
That they're
mostly shorter, but I don't think they all are. I don't know.
I doubt that there are any 10 letter seed phrases, seed phrase words. That'd be quite weird to pick a 10 letter.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, we should check. Yeah. We should look into it.
We can check. Yeah. We'll look into it.
Write that down on the to-do list.
So seed phrases, for a long time, wallets didn't have seed phrases. Seed phrases weren't an initial feature of Bitcoin. And the original Bitcoin core, the wallet would generate these like batches of private keys. I think it was like 100 at a time. And then every time you handed out an address, it would generate, and every time it ran out of addresses to hand out from this batch of 100 private keys, it would generate another 100 private keys. And this had the really annoying property that it's really annoying consequence that you couldn't just back up your Bitcoin Core wallet once and then anytime in the future recover from that backup. You would have to continually back it up every time it generated a new batch of private keys.
Okay, so you'd have to have it connected essentially to Bitcoin Core in some way. Like you'd have to be running a node.
No, this was when Bitcoin Core had an integrated wallet. So right at the beginning when Bitcoin was first released, there was only Bitcoin.exe. And Bitcoin.exe was a Windows application, and it had a wallet, it had a miner, it had a like a GUI wallet, and it was also a full node. And it kind of was this one application that did everything. And so the kind of wallet that first shipped with that was this wallet where it would just generate batches of private keys. And because it generated new private keys, it meant that if you had not backed it up, since you had generated a new batch of private keys and received funds, if you restored from an old backup, you wouldn't be restoring all the private keys that it had. And so there would just be funds missing from your wallet.
But could you use like other people's stuff to like figure that out?
You'd be just RIP. SOL. Yeah. And so that's the big advantages of seed phrases is no matter how many addresses your wallet generates and no matter how many addresses you receive to, they're all derived from this one root secret. And so all you need to back up is that one root secret, that one seed phrase, and then you can go just generate addresses and see, generate this chain of addresses when you reboot it, and you can get, your wallet will be able to see all your funds on chain.
I get what you're saying now when, I think it was during Wartime Bitcoin episode where you said that like you didn't think that Bitcoin could be like divinely created because it was just like not that good.
Oh yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's a good example. right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a mess. Yeah, and also, I mean, a good thing to talk about is, well, why even generate multiple private keys at all? Mm-hmm. Right? Why use multiple addresses? Why not reuse the same address for every single transaction? And the reason is that addresses are public. You can see addresses on chain. And so if your wallet only ever used the same address for every single transaction, then it would be trivial to link all of your transactions on chain. Mm-hmm. But if it generates new addresses, like let's say that you get paid from your boss and then you go spend all that money on groceries. Mm-hmm. And then simultaneously, let's say I pay you back for dinner and then you go buy, you go to the hardware store and get chicken supplies,
right,
for your chickens.
As I do.
As you do. Those two transactions, if your wallet is using different addresses to receive money from your boss and to receive money from me, those two different transactions you make, one for groceries and one for the hardware store, are totally unlinkable on the chain. Mm-hmm. They just look like money coming into like address A and then a different transaction, money coming into address B, and then separately money leaving address A and money leaving address B. Mm-hmm. If your wallet used the same address for every transaction, it would look like, you know, money from your boss coming into address A and then money from me coming into address A. And then you would be able to tell that like the same person had received both those transactions. And then when you spent it, you could see that that address, like money was leaving that address.
So
Does it make sense?
Well, how many private keys does your wallet make?
Your wallet will generate as many private keys as it needs. It will never reuse an address. So if it basically looks to see if it's received any money at an address, most wallets. And if it sees that I've received money to XYZ ABC, which is address like 928, it'll go, okay, now I need a new address the next time I get asked for an address, and it'll generate a new address, address number 929. And it'll just generate, it can generate any number of addresses in a sequence from a seed phrase.
So then when you give someone like an address to send to, what are you giving them?
You're giving them a address. You're basically the sequence is you hit like generate address on your wallet.
And it generates it. And then
it generates like, you can think of the addresses generated from the seed phrase as being, I mean, like just a sequence, mm-hmm. right? And so it'll generate the next address in the sequence, the next private key in the sequence, and then give you the address, and then you'll give them the address.
So then how do people triangulate like, oh, this is Kobe Bryant's wallet or whatever, like looking through transactions?
So that, you know, what could be happening there is when people find Kobe Bryant's wallet, they're probably looking at his Ethereum wallet.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. I saw that with Ethereum, not with Bitcoin.
And Ethereum.
So then what are the Monero bros upset about?
Ethereum always, wallets always reuse the same address.
So Ethereum is, yeah.
Yeah, so every transaction that somebody does, you can link all of those transactions.
So then why do Monero people dislike Bitcoin for that reason?
Right. The reason is that the privacy that not reusing addresses provides you is only a factor when you don't commingle funds. So let's say that you get paid by your boss and you get paid $100 by your boss, and then I pay you back for dinner and I pay you $50, right, to two separate addresses, right? So somebody can see this pile of $100 worth of Bitcoin and this pile of $50 worth of Bitcoin. But then you go out to the grocery store and you want to spend $125 on groceries. You'll create a transaction that
combines those
funds and sends them to the grocery store.
And then that's where someone could trace?
Exactly. Then somebody could say, like address A and address B, this transaction was just created that was signed by A's private key and B's private key. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good heuristic. They could guess like, okay, that they're probably controlled by the same person.
Okay. So let's say you're like, you see one transaction that you're curious about, you could mm-hmm. then sort of backtrack.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You cluster them. Yeah. And basically every time that somebody commingles funds, you then look backwards in their history of transactions and you can group more things together.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like very fun detective work.
It kind of is, yeah. And but there's a lot of work to sort of break that. Like a lot of privacy techniques in Bitcoin are designed to break that, like coin joins and mixing and collaborative transactions.
Lightning Network
is great. I think that on-chain privacy tools are very cumbersome. Obviously, I wouldn't want to discourage anybody from working on them, but my experience of using them has been not so positive, that they're like really confusing to use and they're really annoying. I kind of think Lightning is the future of Bitcoin privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because Lightning, you sort of see these channels open and close, but you can't actually see what they're doing on chain.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And even like, you know, if you're somewhere like Cash App or Square or something where you're supposed to have like reputable Lightning connections, it's like then you can't really like audit everyone else's connections.
That's right.
Like there's a limit to how much you can actually sort of like limit.
I should add, Lightning Network privacy is not perfect. You can usually see, the sender can see the destination of funds. But it's way better than on-chain Bitcoin privacy. Like even with Lightning's privacy problems, it doesn't leave this indelible on-chain footprint that anybody can see at any time in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. What should, I'm looking at this list of questions now.
Yeah. I think we're like, what else do we have?
I don't know.
One thing that I'll say is it's really nice that seed phrases were standardized. I think like,
who, like, do you know the history of that?
I could go look back. We'd have to look at their, you know, at the BIP. I believe that there's a seed phrase.
Okay, BIP, so it's a BIP.
A Bitcoin improvement proposal. There's two technologies. One is there's seed phrases, which say like, okay, here are the words and here's how you get from a list of words to this like root secret. And then there's the hierarchical deterministic wallet spec, which basically says, how do you go from a single secret to generating an infinite chain of private keys on demand.
So like, is this something that was created for Bitcoin?
Yes. Yeah.
And that feels remarkable to me. Like, I don't know. Is that something that could be useful for other things? Or is it just sort of like wallets and private keys that would really apply to?
Just wallets and private keys, but you could use it for other kinds of backup procedures. You know, you could use it if you wanted to backup private keys for something else. It just turns out that people don't really use private keys for very much other than Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I was thinking, like, I was like, can I put all my passwords into seed phrases? But I guess you don't need to generate.
Yeah, well, there is something called the Web Authentication Standard, which is a new standard which is designed to allow people to log into websites using cryptography by producing a signature with a private key. And you do run into this desire to figure out how to back up private keys. So I wouldn't be surprised if eventually there were devices that followed the web authentication standard that had private key based backup.
Is that like where people use like private keys to like verify identity for like a website login? Is that what you mean?
Yep, that's right.
I'm into that idea.
Yeah. It's Apple. I think that Apple, Google, Microsoft are all working on that. It's absolutely high time. Like it's like passwords are insane.
Yeah.
The big difference between a password, like what's the difference between a password and a signature? Like what's the difference and why is one better than the other? The problem with a password is that when you log into a website with a password, you send the website the password. You have to transmit the password like over the internet.
Right.
When you log into a website with a private key, you transmit just the signature. And crucially, the signature doesn't reveal the private key and it can't be used to make more signatures. So usually the website will issue you a challenge and every challenge is different. And you'll produce a signature with your private key just for that challenge and send it back to the website. Because the website generates each challenge randomly, a signature can't be reused from one login session by one person in another login session for another person because the signature won't match the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that you can't take a signature off of one Bitcoin transaction and put it onto another Bitcoin transaction. So that's the big difference, is that you can't like sit there and like get somebody's password that they're, if you get the signature that's being sent to the website, all that gets you is one signature. It doesn't allow you to log in the future.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I always think like whenever like some random ass website makes me like make an account to like purchase, you know, do whatever thing I need to do one time, like Monterey Bay Aquarium made me make an account with Monterey Bay Aquarium to buy aquarium tickets. Yeah. Like you know, I obviously have like a couple passwords in my head that I just sort of cycle through for stuff like that. Ooh. Sorry to reveal that. But like, if I just need to like put something in quickly on the phone, yeah. And I'm just thinking, I'm like, wow, everything that I have that stupid password under is like all reliant on Monterey Bay Aquarium, right. Like not yeah. getting fucked. Yeah, you know yeah, what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, maybe. I mean,
I think that all the time.
Yeah. And like the solution to that is to use a password manager.
I know.
Password managers are like a pain in the ass, right?
Yeah, it's so annoying.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you can't log into things without your password manager. And
I mean, my system, just to let everyone know, is I just have worse passwords for work. Like, if, you know, what are you going to get from the Monterey Bay Aquarium? Uh-huh. You know, like, and then I have like all other things at that tier, uh-huh. like at that password.
I think that's very common. Yeah. People have like quality...
I've got like my best
passwords,
and then I've got my like shit
You're
password.
Not sending your best to the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
No, I am not. Yeah. I do not trust those marine biology hoes with my security.
Absolutely.
What do they know about security?
Nothing.
You know?
Just jellyfish.
Exactly. Yeah. They know a lot about jellyfish, to be fair.
okay. Let's see. Anything else?
I don't know.
I can't think of any other any other topics.
I think we're, you know.
Private keys, seed phrase.
We've done 43 minutes. That's not that bad, actually.
It's not bad.
Like 40 minutes material.
Yep.
For a down day.
Down day. Yeah.
I feel like this picked up our spirits.
Oh yeah, definitely. I feel a little bit better. Yeah. Mansplaining makes me happy.
I love mansplaining Bitcoin. And I love it for you.
Yeah. Good.
So should we just wrap it up?
Yeah. Best. My favorite hardware wallet is the Cold Card.
Yeah.
Not sponsored by Cold Card.
But we'd love to be.
Yeah. Cold Card is great because it's Bitcoin only. It's relatively simple because of that. Ledger is like, okay. Ledger has a bunch of features, and you have to download these apps, and it supports all these shit coins.
And they make these, right? The OpenDimes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So cute.
OpenDimes are like a one-time use thing. Like, it just contains one private key, and you can't get that private key off until you like destroy this little part of the device, and then it's obvious that somebody's gotten the private key. Mm-hmm. So I could put like one Bitcoin on that and give it to you, and then you could just like accept it as transferring that one Bitcoin without an actual
super rare ordinal.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some rare ordinals on here. I believe this one has an ordinal that starts with a zero. This one has, I forget what's on this one. And then this one has an actual uncommon ordinal. It was the first ordinal of some block.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. No, this one has, number one has very old ordinals on it. Ordinals from block number 429. And this one, number two, has an uncommon ordinal.
Nice.
Yeah. And then three doesn't have anything on it because it's the OpenDime for ordinal bounty number three, which is to send in a ordinal with an intelligible name,
right?
Like, that spells something,
right?
But it's incredibly hard. That's, and so difficult. We haven't gotten it. Very, very difficult, and we have gotten zero submissions so far.
You got to modulate
400,000 sats.
We need a difficulty adjustment for the ordinal bounties.
That's right. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Casey.
Yeah.
I always enjoy learning from you.
Yeah, I always enjoy your questions. Always appreciate your questions.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Hopefully, we're feeling better.
Yeah. We will be.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye. Bye, everybody.